Hello, this is Jay from Jay's Politics Podcast. You're listening to the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network on podcast99.org.
Buy with Rob is your best choice when purchasing your new home in the Puget Sound area. Call 360-710-9425 today and get started on the best home buying experience you will ever have. Go to buywithrob.com today.
Here we go.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Do you question whether the program's worth the cost in money and in lives?
You're down here and you look up and you don't think about it too much, but space exploration changes your perception. And it allows us to see things that we should have seen a long time ago.
We have serious problems.
We've got this under control.
You're a bunch of boys. We don't have anything under control.
Podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Allman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
Fox News reported that Trump just nominated three more conservatives to fill vacancies on the liberal-dominated Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Long derided as the Nutty Nine, the court oversees nine western states, including California, and is one of the more influential courts in the country.
Lesson and learn through civil defense. This is Johnny Cash. I'd like all of you to remember that America can withstand enemy attack if we support the emergency plans of our community and learn to help ourselves. Make sure you're prepared. Contact your local civil defense office today.
Man, battle stations, missile.
Chief of Watch, sound the general alarm.
From the Buy With Rob studio, located in beautiful Silverdale, Washington, this is the Dave Bowman Show. Now, here is your submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, stuffy, elitist history buff host, Dave Bowman.
Initiating fire.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today. Most of them are far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, the first man, the two accusations, the Ninth Circuit Court, politics and or the news. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Well, the movie First Man is out, and after NBC reviewed it, I am more excited than ever to still see it, mostly because they hated it. We have two cases in just the last week of men being accused by women of sexual misconduct. Both cases had something in common. The Ninth Circuit Court is awaiting some new judges, to be appointed. Now guess who's having a thrombo over the nominees? You won't be surprised. Here's how you get a hold of me. Text machine, area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. Email is Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. And use your preferred non-denominational web search browser to take you to thedavebowmanshow.com. E lo qui conizio. Greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. Is the illusion of knowledge. Happy Monday, everybody. Unless you happen to be a Raiders fan, then it's probably not. I'm a Broncos fan, so it's not much better. I'm really tired this morning. I spent most of the weekend actually working on Constitution Thursday prep. Constitution Thursday this week. Sometimes what I think is just absolutely fascinating in the terms of the Constitution and casework and stuff like that, as I learned last week, many other people don't find quite as interesting. So I came across a case this week, a murder case, no less, that I think it's fascinating, but I got to make sure. So I spent a lot of time this weekend working on it and not paying attention to much else going on in the big, wide, wonderful world. I would like to formally announce this morning that I do have a great-great-grandparent who was 100% Cherokee. I don't know what that means, but I do have one. So for what it's worth, come on, people, everybody from Oklahoma has somebody in their repertoire of ancestors that is Native American. I mean, it just kind of goes with the territory, right? Just kind of the whole thing. First Man, the movie is out. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't want any spoilers here, but I do want to see it. It would be something of a understatement, I guess, to say that somehow or another, the space program wasn't something of interest to me as a young man. Ben is now 8. I was 8 in 1971 when we were kind of winding down the Apollo moon landing systems and missions. And it was something that I grew up with from my youth. The first launch I remember watching was a Project Gemini launch. I don't remember which one, and if I tried to remember which one, I would never be able to come up with it. But the Apollo launches were amazing. I mean, when you consider what went into those, a failure rate of 1% of the parts that were on a Saturn V rocket would have grounded the mission. It would have ended the mission. And there were literally millions of parts on these rockets. So the things that had to go right were incredible. And the technology that we put into it, the effort that we put into it was amazing and just really beyond anything. You could compare it, I guess, to the Second World War, the effort that went into winning the Second World War with technology, the government, and all those kinds of things. Landing on a man on the moon was kind of the same way. And there are a lot of people who criticize the moon landings because they were nationalistic and somehow or another, they were wasteful. I've never believed that. I've never accepted that argument. The reason I've never accepted that argument is because the technology that I'm talking to you on today was born out of that space program. This thing that we talk to each other on constantly, born out of that technology. The thing I'm recording the show on, born out of the stuff I'm watching on TV over there, born out of that technology. Had those technologies never been developed, think about how different life would be. I mean, microwave ovens, you know, all of that technology played a role in the space program. It played a role in that. But the biggest part of the space program had nothing to do with technology. The biggest and most important part of the space program was people. And for every soldier on the front in World War II, there was something like 20 to 30 soldiers and personnel behind them, making sure that they had what they needed to fight that war. Do you understand that? For every soldier who was standing at the front during the Second World War firing his gun, there were 20 to 30 people behind them that never got anywhere near the front lines in all likelihood, who were making sure they had food, weaponry, supplies, fuel, everything they possibly needed to carry out that mission. And the same is true of Apollo. The same is true of the landing on the moon. For every one man that landed on the moon, there were hundreds, not just tens, but hundreds of people behind them that designed the stuff, that built the stuff, that maintained this, to test it, to make sure it would work. I mean, look how many people were sitting in Capcom for the three guys that were in the capsule. The amount of people that it took to do this is incredible. And again, there's a lot of criticism now about who those people were and what they looked like. And I say to you again, the biggest mistake a historian can make is to judge another culture, another time, by your own cultural and societal values. You weren't there. I was. I mean, I wasn't there, but I was around then. It was a different world, folks. It was a different time, and you are not going to change that. There's nothing in history that's going to change, period. Does it mean that there weren't mistakes made? Sure, I'm sure there were. Does it mean that some people who should have gotten more credit didn't get the credit then, but are getting the credit now? Of course it does. But for all of that, imagine sending three guys on a journey of 250,000 miles, representing the entirety of humanity. Every person on Earth is in the picture that they took looking back at us. Every single person is in that picture. Wave. Three guys to represent all of humanity. And one guy has to be first. There's some drama involved with that. I think most of the drama that's involved with who got out first has been manufactured post-landing. But, you know, it's possible that there was some more of that. But Neil Armstrong was the first man to step on the moon, and that's what he said. A small step for man. He meant to say a man, but somehow it got garbled. A giant leap for mankind. We came in peace for all mankind is what it says on the lander. Mankind has changed. Things have changed. Things have gotten different. Things have gotten better. So, and different. And it's amazing to look at it now, all these years later, and think to myself, I was standing in my living room watching that. Can still see the hardwood floors, the little black and white television that we had with the rabbit ear antennas. And I got to be honest with you, I watched it, and even then, I wasn't exactly sure what I was seeing. The original video of Neil Armstrong stepping on the moon isn't exactly in HD, folks. It's not exactly in high definition 1080p. It's kind of, well, I watched a videotape the other day, an actual VCR videotape, and I thought, how in the world did we ever watch this stuff? It's terrible. Anyway, it wasn't until years later when NASA actually cleaned up the video that I was sure what I was seeing. It was an amazing moment, and I can tell you for this six-year-old boy when that happened, actually, I think I was still five when it happened, six shortly thereafter, I can tell you that it ignited my imagination. The thrill, the idea of going into space, the idea of mankind reaching places we'd never been. In so many ways, it was a new frontier. Just like Columbus and Leif Erikson and all those people sailing around the world, Magellan, to discover new things. It was the same kind of thing. We were going to be able to go places and do things and see things we'd never seen before. And more importantly, gain understanding of things that we had never had before. That's the most important part. And yes, you can send a robot to do that. Of course you can. You can send a robot. And in fact, I'm a pretty firm believer that reality is that for deep, deep space exploration, that's the only way we're going to be able to do it. Because there are too many problems to overcome for humans. But for close stuff, for the moon, for Mars, humanity almost needs that step. And you can't have a scenario like you would have with Dave Scott on Apollo 16 standing up in the top hatch of the Apollo 16 lander and doing a scan of the horizon. You can't get that with a robot. You can't get his reaction to that from a robot. You just can't. Do you know why he did that? Dave Scott was the commander of Apollo 16. He was a veteran. In fact, I believe he flew on the Gemini flight with Neil Armstrong. He was determined because 11 had just been a, hey, let's see if we can land on the moon. Let's just see if we can do it. 12 had been a quick repeat. Yet, see, we can do it again, testing the hardware, but let's do a little bit of science. 13 had failed. 14 had been somewhat scientific, but there was some political issues with 14. 15 was really the first completely scientific exploration of the moon. And Dave Scott had trained. He's a military pilot, trained as a geologist and learned how to do things as a geologist, gone to the moon as basically a geologist. And he went there to study the moon. You don't get that with a robot. You can't get that emotion. You can't get that feeling. I met an astronaut that walked on the moon. I met Jim Irwin, my youth. And while I don't remember a whole lot about it, what I do remember was the intensity with which he spoke about standing on that moon and how the emotions of that moment and realizing what he represented. And of course, Neil Armstrong represented that and even more because he was literally the first. There are a lot of arguments in our history. Who was the first person to step in the New World? Who was the first person to circumnavigate the Earth? Who was the first person to do it? There are a lot of questions about that, but there are very few doubts about who the first man to step on the moon was. In fact, there aren't any doubts, except for the people that don't think we really did it, and those people are lunatics anyway, so you don't need to listen to them. So, when I started reading the reviews for First Man, thinking, I've kind of cut out going to the movies, number one, because it's a schedule thing, number two, but, you know, it's expensive, and I don't know about you, but I can't go to the movies without a popcorn, large popcorn. So, you know, I didn't even see Solo in the theater. How's that? Okay. But I do want to see this one in the theater. So I started reading the reviews. And of course, NBC just absolutely ripped it as white privilege, misogynistic, nationalistic Trumpisms. And I mean, they did everything but blame Trump for landing on the moon. It was kind of funny. And I thought, well, let's. Pretty much seals the deal for me. I'm going to see it. Doesn't mean that there aren't questions about the space program. There are many people on the conservative right who believe very firmly that we need to stop throwing money down the NASA hole. I see the argument. I understand the argument. I question whether or not we continue to have benefits. Do we continue to have benefits? If we continue to gain things from it, then we should be careful about that. If there are no more gains to be had, and I'm starting to question that with the space station, I really am. I mean, really, haven't we kind of done it, been there, done that? I mean, you know, I get that there's research to be done, but does it really need to be paid for by the government? It's a question of where we go from there. What do we do now? How do we get to the next step? Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. I want to go to Mars. I mean, I want humanity to go to Mars. I personally do not want to get into the rocket and go to Mars. There's some reasons for that. One, as it turns out, while the enthusiasm of my youth remains for space travel, and I would love to be in space for about 20 minutes, beyond that, I just don't think I want to deal with the issues you have to have in space. It is, I'm told, very similar to being on a submarine. Not in the sense that, you know, it's a ship at sea, but there are things about submarining that we don't talk about in polite company because you don't want to hear about them. You want to hear about the cool stuff that we did. You don't want to hear about what happens when a sanitary tank backs up. You don't want to hear about, you know, what it smells like. You don't, you know, the privacy aspect of being a submarine, and I understand on a space station or a shuttle, it's even more degrading. And those are experiences I just don't need to have anymore. I've been there, done that, don't need to do it again. 20 minutes of weightlessness, I'm cool with that, but then bring me back. I don't really need to be spending 3 months in space or 3 years in space going to Mars, although I gotta tell you, it would be tempting. It really would be. But going to space is horrifyingly bad. I mean, number one, it's very dangerous. I mean, people don't like to talk about the fact that space is dangerous, but it is. I mean, think of all the ways that, you know, I talk about how the ocean could kill you, but think about how space can kill you. And none of those deaths are pleasant. None of those deaths are like you get on a submarine where it implodes and you just, it's faster than the human brain can actually comprehend. So you never knew it. In space, it doesn't quite work that way. You get to experience all the pleasures of those particular deaths. In addition to that, you've got, you know, meteorites, you've got radiation, you've got, it's not talked about a lot, but NASA actually limits the amount of time women can spend in space because the radiation damages reproduction. You stretch out. Did you know this? Your joints and your back particularly stretch out. And when you come back to Earth, many astronauts have reported that there's great back pain. If you've seen the videos of when the astronauts come back from the space station, they sit in those chairs because they can't move. They literally can't stand up. So you're going to go all the way to Mars eating that crappy space food, assuming you don't sleep the whole way. And that's another issue. I mean, have we really mastered putting people to sleep for 3-4 years? I don't think we have. I don't know that anybody's volunteered to have that done. Going to space is horrifying. So I don't really want to go. I mean, I'd like to pop in for a visit, transport me like at Star Trek. Oh, that's cool. I'm back. But God bless the people that are willing to step in there and do that. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins, among them, they were willing to strap a Saturn V to their backs, essentially, fly into space, fly to a place that only, at that point, only six other people had been to, and then go to a place that nobody had been to. And they were willing to put up with all the degrading things that you had to do privacy-wise, things that you had to smell, things that you had to eat. They were willing to do all of that for the sense of accomplishment on the part of humankind. And that's what he said. It's a large, giant leap for mankind. We come in peace for all mankind. Not just the ones that NBC thinks went. And NBC does a great disservice by forgetting that there were literally hundreds of people behind every astronaut. They don't get that. They don't understand, I guess, what Neil Armstrong did. And I guess the part that really confuses them when you get right down to it is that Neil Armstrong came back to Earth. Buzz Aldrin came back to Earth. Michael Collins came back to Earth after that first trip. And they did their parades and things that the government told them that they had to do. And then what? Did you ever see Neil Armstrong making millions of dollars in public appearances? Buzz Aldrin wrote a book, but you know what his book was about? His book was about how hard it was for him coming back because it changed him. And he had to deal with a lot of issues. And now he's an advocate for going to Mars. He's not saying, well, it was dangerous, we shouldn't have done it. Now he's saying, we got to make the next step. And I know Michael Collins wrote a book about the adventure, but I'm not sure I've seen him in public since then. I know they had a 50 or some sort of anniversary a few years ago where the three of them were back together, but you don't hear about these guys. And that's not the way our culture is used to people who are famous behaving. We're used to them getting out in front of everybody and we got to know their political opinions and we got to know what kind of shirts they wear and cigarettes they smoke and all that stuff. Instead of just saying, look, we didn't go for my purposes. We went for all of us. We represented all of you. And I think NBC kind of forgot that in their rather idiotic review of First Man. But be that as it may, I can't wait to go see it. I don't know about you, but I am really looking forward to seeing this movie. And I'm trying to figure out a way to do it in the next day or so. The problem is, it's the off season, so the movies don't start until the afternoon. So I got to be here when Ben gets home. So I got to find a showing that's after the show, but is over before Ben gets out of school. And so far I haven't found that. And it's close enough that I can make it work. We have a theater here in town, but right now their show times aren't compatible with that. So I got to figure out the way to make that work and get that functional for me. And I'm looking for, and as soon as I do, I'll let you know. I'm always a little hesitant, about spoilers and stuff like that. But everything I've seen from the people that I've talked to, from the people that have seen it, is a fantastic film. And it just reminds you of what it was. And in the same way that The Right Stuff. I mean, many people didn't even know those stories until they saw that movie, even though it had been a book for many years. They didn't know any of those things. And I don't know that there's ever been a good biopic that handles Project Gemini yet. Project Gemini was, everybody looks at Mercury and goes, okay, so we could put a man in space. We could put a man in orbit. Yay. Apollo goes to the moon. But it was that intermediary step, the Project Gemini, that really laid the groundwork. It really tested all the tests. That's all it was a testbed project. And one of those tests was docking so that they would learn to dock. And one of those flights, Neil Armstrong was the commander. I believe Dave Scott was his co-pilot, if I'm not mistaken. Came really close to not making it. Really close. And it's a fascinating story. Buzz Aldrin made one of those Gemini flights. He's the guy that basically invented how to spacewalk. Up to that time, it really hadn't worked. But he's the guy that worked out how to make it work. And he was the guy that could do rendezvous calculations in his head. I mean, he was called Dr. Rendezvous. He knew how to find something in space and dock with it. These men were incredible. And again, for every one of them, hundreds of people behind them, hundreds of people making sure that they would have what they would need, that the equipment worked, that it was properly built and properly calibrated and all of that stuff. And it was an immense effort on the behalf of all Americans because we all participated. I mean, if nothing else, we all paid our taxes. Well, I didn't. I was, you know, six, but I'm sure that had I been working, I would have contributed. But where do we go from here? That's really the question. And from that aspect of it, I appreciate the question. I mean, where do we go from here? Do we continue to use the government to do this? Do we turn it over to private industry? I'm a little, you know, I grew up in the space era, so I'm a little used to NASA. But at the same time, when I finally got to go to Cape Kennedy, Kennedy Space Center, we don't call it Cape Kennedy anymore, it's Cape Canaveral. But when I finally got to go there in the summer of 2005, spring of 2005, It was one of those days. It was an off day, so there weren't a lot of people there. And they have one of those sit down with a real astronaut and ask him questions, things. And of course, it's geared towards kids, but I wasn't a kid. I was well into my late 40s by that point. And I guess early 40s. Anyway, point being, there was an astronaut there. And since I was pretty much the only person in that thing, I kind of took over the question. Now, one of the questions I asked him was, how do you guys feel about the private guys, because the Spaceship One had just completed its flight. And this particular astronaut, I've forgotten his name, was very, very supportive of that. He thought it was a great thing. And it may be the wave of the future. It may be scaled composites, Spaceship One, White Knight. That may be the wave of the future. Tesla may get us to Mars. But if they do, it will be because Neil Armstrong went to the moon for all mankind. And not because he did it just for white people, like NBC thinks. But you can't really change their minds, can you? Can't really make that happen. It's half past. I went way longer on that than I was supposed to. Sorry. It's something I'm passionate about, and it's my show. So there. It's Plausibly Live. It's the Dave Bowman Show right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Stay with us, back right after this.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. You are listening to the Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back. Tis I, Dave. You want to join me? Area code 209-565. Dave is the text machine. It's also the voicemail machine 24/7. Email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. Of course, we're right here on the web, thedavebowmanshow.com, facebook.com/thedavebowmanshow, Twitter, just look for The Dave Bowman Show, iTunes. So many different ways to get a hold of us. It's not even funny, right? Sorry, that look of surprise on my face is that moment that I realized that I forgot to do something on my checklist. It's not going to affect anything. It just makes the post-production longer. That's all. So, pain in the butt. The more this stuff grows, the more complicated it gets what you got to do afterwards. So anyway, I spent way more time on the space program than I wanted to. I want to show you something. And this is why, if you're not on the video part, you might want to rethink that in the future. I want to see if I can do this. I'm going to try to blow this up so you can see this. What you're looking at there is a store in New York City. The woman that's on your left of your screen is now approaching the counter. Megan, watch the little boy in the green. Did you see what happened there? He bumped her with his backpack, and now she's going off. She is really making, she's going to turn this into a scene. You will not be surprised to learn that a few moments later, and this video goes on for another minute, and you can see where it's getting to be a confrontation. That's the boy's mother. She's coming back and yelling at her. The little boy is visibly upset. There's a lot of guys shaking, the shopkeeper's holding a beer. People are going kind of bananas here. People are yelling at each other. Old gentleman there getting involved. This little incident is emblematic, I guess, of what's going on to some degree in our country. There's three things here that you need to be aware of that happened. Number one, following that little incident, the woman went outside, called the police, said that she had been, quote, sexually assaulted by the little boy, by the I gather he's about five, looks a little older than that to me. But she goes outside, calls the police, demands that they come because she has been, quote, sexually assaulted by that little boy. Obviously, the police in New York City are busy. They don't show up for about 20 minutes. And in the meantime, she's on the phone and she's making comments to the tune of, see, white woman accuses black boy of attacking her. And I get it. I get the optics of this. So that's the first thing here. There's an accusation of sexual assault in this. There's a racial component to this. And there's also a mental illness component to this. This woman is known to be not 100% all there. And if you've seen other pictures of her when she's outside, this is her when she was outside talking to various people about what had happened. She was interviewed by the news. She said that she had not seen the video. And then she said she had seen the video. She's not there. There's some real mental illness issues here, and they're well known. But you go back to this assault accusation that she made. If there hadn't been that video that proved that it didn't happen, that in fact what happened was a little boy with a backpack bumped into her in a very crowded bodega in New York City, what would we be doing right now? She would still be screaming that she was sexually assaulted, that this little boy groped her, and there would be a great outcry of, as she said herself, white woman calls police on little black boy, and there would have been a lot of ill feelings. And we would have had to confront ourselves as a nation as we look directly into the eyes of what we've been talking about for the last, God, it seems like forever, doesn't it? We would have had to really look into the face of that and go, well, do we believe every woman, even if it's a five-year-old boy, or do we need something more than that? Again, you saw all those witnesses around it. None of them saw anything happen. And then there's this element of mental illness. You know, with people, there's a lot of that, and I can tell you, I got a lot of experience with dealing that, particularly in my former life, dealing with homeless people and stuff like that. There's a lot of dual diagnosed mental illness in this country with people that do strange things in strange places. How do you deal with that? How does that affect that? But again, the biggest factor in all of this was the video monitoring. And the video monitoring is, again, becoming more and more pervasive in our entire country. And now we're getting to the point where police wear body cameras, where store owners want to have cameras everywhere. People are starting to put cameras on their house and everything. We're starting to watch everything because why? Because people make up accusations and they want to have backup. I remind you of the story last week about the USC professor who was pilloried and students called for his firing after 30 years as a professor because he said that sometimes accusers make things up. Here was some video evidence of someone making up an accusation against a five-year-old boy. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we would have said, nope, we have to believe her. Even though every bone in our body, every synapse in our brain and every witness that was there said, no, it didn't. Four dentists from California, three brothers, Ali Badkubahi, Poria Edelat, Saman Edelat, and Sina Edelat were charged with the sexual assault of a woman at the Wynn Las Vegas last week. She said that they conspired, that they assaulted her, that they conspired to assault her, and they kidnapped her, and she made the accusation. Prosecutors have now dropped all the charges against all four men. Why? Because oddly enough, The statements from the judge said after review, the prosecutor said after review of the facts of the case, it was clear that the allegations were completely fabricated. What was the evidence? Videotape. It's Las Vegas, so you know everything's videotaped in Las Vegas. She alleged that the four men repeatedly raped her in a room on July 28th after she met one of them at the bar. But as it turns out, the video evidence shows they did no such thing. She went one way, they went another. It didn't happen. Accusers sometimes lie. But now we're back to everything in our world is videotaped. Every move sometimes that we seem to make is videotaped. Everything that we're doing is being watched. And in a world of Me Too, we have to believe the accuser. How long is that likely to stand up when everything we're doing is being watched? I don't know. There's some elements here in all three of the, in both of these cases that intrigue me. Number one, you have the incident. You have the common element of videotaping. Number two, you have the element of a false accusation being made by someone with dubious motivations. The first woman, Teresa Klein, I don't know what her motivation is. Other than she's mentally ill, I don't know. The second woman, I don't know. I suspect, like in the first case, while there may not have been any specific racial element to it, she certainly recognized that there was a racial component to it. In the second case, I suspect there was as well, because obviously all four of these men are of Middle Eastern origin or East Asian, West Asian origin. They are clearly not, white, cisgendered, privileged males. And I don't know anything about her at this particular point, but perhaps there's an element of racism in that as well, a racial action in there as well. But it's this videotape that okay, yay, it exonerated everybody. It cleared up everything. It proved that these two people who made these accusations, as the professor said a couple of weeks ago, were lying. They made them up. But what if there had been no video? And conversely, how much video are we subject to every day? If I go to the mall today and I walk through the mall, how many cameras pick up what I do? When I'm driving in my town, we learned this week that those little hut things that tell you to slow down because you're going too fast. We learned this week that the Department of Homeland Security is embedding license plate readers in there, and they're tracking your movements via that. How hard would it be to put a video camera in there? You got traffic cams. You've got all of this stuff that's monitoring us everywhere we go. And while we're focused on that, while we're focused on those other issues, our privacy has gone to hell and back. I mean, it really has. But at the same time, we have two cases here where, because our privacy has been essentially obliterated, five people were exonerated for accusations against them that were clearly false, whatever the motivation might have been. I don't know. I don't know the answer to this. I don't know where this ends up. I really don't. I do know that a little five-year-old boy was viciously accused of doing something that he clearly did not do by a woman who had motivations that could range from she's mentally ill to she hates a certain race. I don't know. I do know that she got caught lying about it, because accusers sometimes lie. And this woman in Las Vegas, whatever her motivations were, she was lying, and the only reason she did it was because she didn't know that she was being videotaped. Had she known that she was on videotape, do you think she would have made that accusation? Same with this first woman, although who knows with her. Second woman, though, privacy. Reasonable expectation of privacy? I know we have this argument all the time, and I know the courts are being inundated with these arguments about who should be watching us, and we on the conservative right are supposed to be big Snowden supporters. Yay, Snowden! He showed us the government's lying. We already knew the government was lying, but he proved the government was lying. But at the same time, how do we feel about these people being exonerated by that means? Something to think about as the courts begin the new sessions and they begin talking and taking cases and looking at things in the Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco, based in San Francisco. The Ninth Circuit Court, for those of you who don't know, is the Western section of the district courts that Congress has set up. It covers Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, California, Arizona, Hawaii, Alaska, and Guam and the Northern Mariana Islands. So basically, all the cases that get appealed in those areas, now these have to be federal cases, not state cases. So for example, here in Washington, they overturned the death penalty on a state case, so that can't be appealed. But on a federal case, if it gets appealed, you can see the districts there, Western Washington, Eastern Washington, Oregon, Northern Cal, Eastern Cal, Central Cal, Southern Cal, Arizona. Each one of those has an appeals district court. So if they hear the case, that's the lower court that you hear talked about. And then it gets popped up to San Francisco. If they decide it needs to be appealed, it goes up to San Francisco to the Ninth Circuit Court. And they hear cases one of two ways. In bank, which is all the justices, or in panel, which is three, which are supposedly randomly chosen. That's how they do that. They randomly choose the judges that will sit on these three judge panels. When they hear things in bank, which they don't like to do because that takes up everybody's time, all the justices that are on that panel sit down. The problem that the Ninth Circuit Court has right now is there are seven openings on the Ninth Circuit Court. I don't know if you knew that or not. Seven openings. And normally, the way they normally do business is the president, who's in charge of making the nominations to fill these seats, sits down with the senators from each of those states. And they vet the nominee, they pre-vet the nominees before they go to the Judicial Committee for their hearings. So, like we watched with Kavanaugh, in theory, because the two senators from that state have already vetted this and have agreed to this nomination, theoretically, those are just a dog and pony show. They're just, you know, for show's sake. And then theoretically it goes on to the Senate, and these are very easily handled, and these are very easily set piece. But now, in recent years, this has become something of a battle. You'll recall that the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which hears cases originating in Washington, D.C., and federal cases over there, the second most important court in the land for all practical purposes, was missing a bunch of judges. And that's why Harry Reid, because they don't have any senators from D.C., so the senators themselves handle that. And they were getting some pushback on the nominees that Obama wanted. That's why Harry Reid instigated the nuclear option, was to get those three justices set on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, the thinking being that they would then kill the GOP case against Obamacare. That was the theory anyway. Didn't quite work out the way they wanted it to. Anyway, point being that there are a bunch of missing justices on the Ninth Circuit Court, and normally this process happens. Well, after Feinstein's fiasco with Kavanaugh. Now, again, whether you agree with the woman who made the accusation or not is irrelevant. The way that Dianne Feinstein handled that was abysmal. It was embarrassing, and it was clearly political. You will not convince. I don't care which side you're on. You will not convince me that Dianne Feinstein's handling that was not calculated to be political. It had to be. She was using that woman's accusations for political gain, period. Well, there's an old saying, karma's a bitch. So for months, they've been negotiating these judge nominees for California for the Ninth Circuit Court. Well, Trump, I guess this week, basically said, screw you, and has nominated people that neither Kamala Harris nor Dianne Feinstein will support. But just like the case of Kavanaugh, there's nothing really that In the broad spectrum of things, if the Senate Judiciary Committee decided to sit down and nominate these people, send it to the floor, the same thing would happen. They would still win because of the breakdown of the Senate, at least until January. So it could be that Trump is playing a little tit for tat over Kavanaugh. It could be that. It could just be that, you know, Harris and Feinstein are being recalcitrant again. Could be any of that stuff. It could just be plain old politics. The truth of the matter is that even if Trump got all seven nominees that he wants onto the Ninth Circuit, it wouldn't change the ideological balance of the Ninth Circuit Court, at least not initially. It might in the sense of who ends up on the three-judge panels, but it wouldn't change it in bank. And the Ninth Circuit Court, remember, is the same court that when a three-judge panel found in favor of Peruta, again, gun rights in California, didn't like what the three-judge panel did, and so they reheard the case. They vacated their own decision, reheard the case in bank, and, of course, found totally the opposite. No, those rights don't exist, so no, you lose, Peruta. And theoretically, if any one of these three-judge panels found, I don't know, pick a ridiculous thing if one of these three-judge panels somehow or another overturned abortion, and again, I have no idea how they would do it, but if they were to, the Ninth Circuit Court would vacate its own ruling and meet in bank and overturn it again. So the ideological makeup of the court, leaning of the court, probably could not change even if Trump got all of his nominees. But it is interesting to see. I mean, we spent all of this energy, all this national debate, all this argument on Kavanaugh. And what really matters, we hardly even notice. I mean, the fact of the matter is that unless you happen to be a Supreme Court wonk, a court system wonk, you probably didn't even know there were vacancies on the Ninth Circuit Court. By the way, there's a vacancy on the D.C. Circuit Court right now. Did you know that? Judge Kavanaugh moved up. So that seat's got to be filled. And all of these debates and all these arguments now are now couched in political arguments rather now than they used to be, which was by the time they actually got to the Senate Judiciary Committee on these lower courts. By the time they actually got there, it was just a formal, it was just a formality. It wasn't anything really in it because the two senators in questions from the states in questions had already said, yes, we want this guy. And generally speaking, senators will go, okay, we'll give them what they want. But now that's not going to happen. In a way, I think that's good. In a way, I think that's this whole idea that somehow or another before these hearings, they were essentially buying and selling judge seats. That's a little problematic, don't you think? These backroom deals. Aren't we supposed to hate that? Aren't we supposed to not like that? Aren't we supposed to, as conservatives, rail against that? Aren't we supposed to be opposed to that? But at the same time, is it really that bad of an idea for the president to call in two senators from the state and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you about who I want to nominate for your seats on your district court? I'd like to get your input, your opinion about this so that we can maybe avoid those fights. I don't know. If there's political favoritism being exchanged, I'll give you your judge if you'll give me your vote on this. I think that's a problem. But at the same time, I don't think it's a bad thing to publicly debate these, do you? 565-DAVE, 209-565-3283. You can text me, you can voicemail me, you can email me, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. Any one of those will get you to me. You can let me know what you think about all of that. Speaking of the courts, like I said, I spent most of the weekend working on Constitution Thursday. And just fascinating stuff. The stuff that's before our courts that we don't even know about. Sorry, I'm kind of teasing Constitution Thursday for this week. It's a pretty important case. It's a murder case. Well, originally it was a murder case, but what if the 10th Circuit Court's ruling stands, because the 10th Circuit Court has already ruled in this and it's going to the Supreme Court, it's going to be heard, I think, Thursday. If the 10th Circuit Court stands, the state of Oklahoma, my beloved ancient homeland, been there in 18 years, could find itself half the size it used to be. Can you imagine that? A court case that might literally eviscerate a physical existence of a state of the United States. All because the state of Oklahoma wants to sentence a guy to death. Well, what if they didn't? What if they didn't want to sentence him to death? What if they didn't want to do that? Maybe this case wouldn't have made it that far. Anyway, it's fascinating stuff. And as I was watching Ben play at the park yesterday, I'm reading all this stuff and I'm texting Pat the lawyer. What do you think of this? And we're talking about it. And it's unlikely, but anything is possible in today's era. That's the whole point, is that in today's world, anything can happen. And you just don't know anymore. You don't have a clue what might end up happening if things don't fall the way that they should. Or could, or you want them to. Either way, it's a crapshoot anymore, isn't it? And sometimes that's the way it ends up in the big, wide, wonderful world. So I guess the Buccaneers just fired their defensive coordinator. Shocker there. Have the Raiders fired Gruden yet? After that performance yesterday, I would have left him in London. You get back on your own, dude. You got $10 million. I was sad. I mean, not that I mind, but it was sad. At least the Broncos almost came back. Plus, we got game 3 of the National League Championship Series today. Dodgers taking on the Brewers. That's been a good series. Glad to see the other series tied 1-1, Houston and Boston. Although I really would like Houston to win that, so we'll see how it goes on. I'm going to get out of here, see if I can catch a movie. If not, go do some other stuff. And I will be back tomorrow. We're here every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific time, right here on podcast99.org, as well as facebook.com/The Dave Bowman Show for the live video. And you can always get the show on demand at podcast99.org, as well as thedavebowmanshow.com. Either one of those will get you to it. You can hear what's going on, see what's happening, and keep up with what we're talking about. Plus, you can comment, participate in the show. That's the best part of this, is being able to talk to people. It's so weird. That technology that took us to the moon lets us talk to people literally around the world instantaneously. Whether they're in Maryland like Alex is, or Modesto or Lodi like Pat the Lawyer is, or anywhere in the world. And it's not telephone stuff. It's pretty amazing. I love it. Imagine what we'll have if we ever get to Mars. Can't wait for that. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You do not want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I'm Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. Check us out again at podcast99.org or thedavebowmanshow.com. Download us, like us on iTunes. If you use that, leave us a rating and review. That would be really great. And have a great day, buddy. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Take care.
Bowman Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.